Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And tonight, once again, the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho and friends. How's everybody doing there? It's Duff McKagan calling him. I'm in beautiful Seattle, Washington, 75 degrees, perfect. This next one, pretend it's 1991. Hey, Chris Jericho, I just flew in from Chernobyl, and boy, are my arms legs. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
That's awful. That was really bad. But thanks to Duff for bringing it every single Friday. He never disappoints. And if it's more laughs, you're after the second episode of the Winnipeggers came out last night on my official YouTube channel. Rybo, Dave Spivak, and myself got together to talk about When Nature Calls. That was Spiwi's idea, of course. All the times that bodily functions got the best of us. Like the time I flew on a plane with Hulk Hogan and vomited down my leg. And the time Dave, basically shit his pants while doing a sales call. So pour yourself a cold one. And laugh along with us. We're going to release new Winnipeggers episodes on Thursday night, every Thursday night at 9 Eastern. And you're going to want to grab a drink with us for those. And you're also going to want to have a drink for tomorrow night's Saturday night special. Thanks to all of you for hanging out with me every Saturday night, having a great time. Hope you guys are as well. I'll be answering more of your questions, telling some more stories. And of course, we will close things out with another highly requested world-renowned sing-along. So bring your song request for that. Saturday special every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern on Facebook Live and my official YouTube channel, and the Winnipeggers every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on my YouTube channel as well. So we're doing our best to keep you entertained and laughing during this crazy time in the world. And it's been a crazy time for EC3 here today on Talk is Jericho. He was fired from the WWE in March in the middle of the pandemic, but he just started back with Impact. He's going to tell us what happened with Vince McMahon and the WWE, including details about the last run he had with Jon Moxley. Just before Mox left the company to come to AEW, EC's also talking about his early run with TNA during Dixie Carter's tenure and what happened when Eric Bischoff came in to TNA and then when Billy Corgan ran it for a brief time and tried to buy it, ultimately why he left just as Anthem bought TNA. Lots of great stories. EC3 picks his words wisely, and we're going to hear them right now on Talk is Jericho. All right, so it's really cool when you get a chance, when you're in different text groups with people, and you actually get to see them in person. We don't need to have to get too much into the text group, but I'm here with EC3, who is amazing to me, first of all, that you've been able to keep your name through like three or four different companies. That's the one thing that you always have is that name.
The power of LegalZoom. Trademarking.
Did you trademark it beforehand?
I trademarked it at the tail end of the Impact run when I was about on my way out. So,
when you worked for Vince, they didn't ask for it, or
inquired about changing names, so they asked me to come up with a bunch of different names, and I came up with some of the worst possible names ever. They all had the syllables, it's a vowel, E, C, the consonant, and then the number 3 involved in it. So, like, Ezra Crushington, like, please don't change it. I created this brand, it's kind of cool. It has nothing to do with the past name I worked under, Ethan Carter III. Like, it just sounds cool. It's easy to chant.
Right.
EC3. I wish I did change it. Cause
Ezra Crushington. But EC3 originally was the idea of Ethan Carter was like Dixie Carter's rich, Because we've never discussed this before. I mean, we've met a few times, and we went to Striper together.
Hell yeah.
Which was a blast.
Thanks for that.
But to get a chance to actually sit down and talk to him, we'll go through everything. But Ethan Carter III originally was like Dixie's cousin.
Entitled nephew.
Ah, gotcha.
Which is interesting, too, because I would be, if I'm her nephew, I'm her children's cousins, right?
Right. Okay.
Anytime she would introduce me to the family, especially her children, she's like, hey, it's Uncle E. And I was just confused for a long time.
How does that work?
How does that work? But, yes, I was her entitled, spoiled, rich nephew. And it was kind of the combination of it was a great idea from somebody else that I was able to run with and hopefully make my own.
Because there was like, is there like a football player or something that was something, something three? Or
there's RG3.
That's right.
He was a first round draft pick. We were just talking about knee injuries because your poor dog has a torn ACL.
Mm-hmm.
He had the unbelievable rookie season, tore his ACL, and then was never the same.
Never the same. Never came back.
Kind of like me.
Well, there's a lot to talk about before we get into. You drove here from Orlando, and you said that you were a couple minutes late because you had to make a pit stop. You said it might be a podcast-worthy story. So anytime carrot is dangled in front of me, take it away.
No, it was cool because I run a print shop, and so I'm printing my own merchandise. www.freeec3.com. Get yourself some wearable propaganda. But yesterday, I run with my buddy. We fulfill orders, and like sometimes I'm printing it, but we make all the merch. It's cool and means something to me because we get to design everything.
So mm-hmm.
for whatever artistic purpose that serves. But this name came up, and it was just Bruce Lee. I was like, Bruce Lee, cool name. And it said Brandon, Florida. I'm like, I'm going to Tampa tomorrow. Brandon's on the way. What if I just stop by this dude's house? So we have a business number, so I text him, hello, this is so-and-so from freeec3.com. I was wondering if you would be available tomorrow from 1 to 1:30 p.m. Yeah, I'll be there. All right, cool. So I drive there, and the way he answered, I thought he was a child. So knock on his door, open the door. It's this guy taller than me, like 6'8". 30-year-old dude, he's like, holy shit. I'm like, what's up, man? Got your stuff. And then I kind of filmed it, so obviously I'm going to use it as a, your master marketer, you know the deal.
Of course.
So I'm going to use it for socials, but it was cool, and it was fun. And
that's a great idea, just showing up.
Just showing up at people's houses.
Yeah.
There was another one that came in from Winter Park, and which is right by Orlando, and I was like, something about this Brandon one speaking to me, so this is the one I'm going to do it to.
How much would you have freaked out if it was actually Bruce Lee? The rumor that he's really alive and never died is true. He's a big EC3 fan.
I'd be.
You guys become
friends.
In my cap. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How about Once Upon a Time in Mexico scene with him and Brad Pitt fighting was awesome.
Oh, yes. Wasn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because out of all the things people want to hear us talk about, it's that.
But then all the Bruce Lee's family got mad because they didn't get permission for that or whatever.
It's fiction.
Yeah, I know.
Come on, Quentin Tarantino.
Well, the Jews killed Hitler and, you know.
Blew him up in a movie theater.
And then Brad Pitt's pit bull killed Manson.
It's a work.
But let's talk about why you're here, because once again, for the second time, you have been, you were released.
Shit canned. Tossed outside.
Out the door.
What a.
See you later.
Take a hike, loser.
But it was. No, it's fine. It was, you were there for 2 years this time? 3 years?
About, yeah. 2 years. I went through NXT, which was awesome. And then, called up, and then, you know, didn't work out. Had a pretty sustainable head injury for a long time. When I was cleared to come back, COVID happened, and I was one of the many talented people that got released. Not a big deal.
So, but to me, it seems strange because it's funny because on the show, originally NXT, Derek Bateman.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember you had a pretty good personality.
Pretty decent.
Pretty
yep.
funny.
Yep.
Obviously, you look like the prototype for what Vince is looking for. Big special. Guy, awesome shape,
sweet muscles,
hot, sweet muscles. And two times you kind of slipped through the cracks, but this time it seemed really strange because you came in and I don't remember ever really seeing you get even too much of a chance.
No.
When you came in from NXT.
No, it was interesting. It never felt right when I had the call up, you know, because when that's something you chase your whole life, that dream that like you're waiting for the call, and like you get many calls, you get calls that get signed, you get calls that get used, but like the call up, you think there's a purpose, this is it. And when it happened, first off, I was on injury reserve with a concussion, So it was suspicious.
Right when you came in?
No, when I got called up to the main roster. Okay, gotcha. And that was right before, it was mid-December, I think, of whatever year it was, before the Rumble. But I was, so that was odd to me, but you know what? There's a reason, there's a purpose. Let's go. And
I don't know. You're laughing, yeah.
Yeah, it's all so hysterical.
But the thing is, too, I think one thing that you started really doing well in Impact when you were there is cutting great promos.
Yes.
So, no promos at all?
None. Zero. I was actually ordered not to speak.
Why?
That's a good question, Chris. Yeah, I don't know, because I think it was a rush call-up of a bunch of people because they were feeling heat from, you know, numbers were lower, fans were complaining, you know, just one of those, we're doing something reset. Who can make it on their own is the way I figured it, because I thought, I'm in NXT just to get called up to the main roster because it's more of my forte. NXT's fun, love doing it, love working with those guys, but, like, this is kind of, this would be more my wheelhouse character.
Right. NXT is focusing more on kind of work rate, big matches, and guys kind of learning, but you kind of already know all that. And you're a talker.
Yeah.
You're a main roster talker.
Yeah. So, but then the call-up happened, and which was interesting enough, you know, you wait for the call-up your whole life, and the most exciting part's your vignette, right? Like, what's going to bring you in? What's cool? What's going to build you in? They kind of haphazardly threw all these vignettes together. And my literal vignette to get called up to the biggest company, biggest entertainment company wrestling in the world, was filmed by my roommate in my apartment in Orlando. A nice apartment, don't get me wrong. It's a high-rise condo. It's pretty cool. Call it F-Town. I can say these things, though. But in hindsight, it's just like, this is it? And it was a very bizarre, like, I walk in. Not in a suit, but looking nice. So they're taking away the suit aspect in this top 1%.
Because you wore a suit in as EC3.
Yeah.
And the top 1%.
Would wear a suit.
Right. The top 1% income level.
Yes. Gotcha. Yeah. Top 1% talent. And even top 1% mentality. Man, I used to have good promos about that. I forgot them all. You're hitting that a lot. But yeah, so we filmed this vignette in my apartment. And it airs for like 6 weeks. We never hear anything about anything. Royal Rumble comes. I was like, well, maybe I'll be number three, get a good pop, and we're off to a good start. Nope. Then I think it was a week after, I'm working with Moxley, and he told that story on this podcast.
He did, so, yeah.
Which was a, I didn't know the details till I heard it here first.
Well, tell the story that he told.
Basically that because of his asking to, or his refusal to re-sign, he was kind of on a rocky ship. We had a little TV program where I'm the babyface and he's the heel. We had like a 3-minute match and I slip over and it was whatever, but then we go on to these live events and we're working. I'm working as the babyface, he's working as the heel, and he's just getting great reactions because he should.
Right.
He's sacrificed for years for that company. He told that company straight up, F you. Like, people love that. That's cool. And, like, for 7 years, this guy puts his body, his soul on the line for these people. They're going to love and respect him. Whereas I'm a jacked up dude in trunks who does
who hasn't had a promo or any kind of character.
No character, no development. And I'm a hell of a hand, but I'm not like a flashy
guy. Right.
Like, that's not at all what I do. So we're working these matches. I think there's four. First three, it's me as a good guy, him as a heel, and he's getting cheered. And it's kind of, it's working, though. It's working in the sense that, like, man, this is actually my wheelhouse, because if I come in here pushed as, like, the mega five move of doom babyface that can't be beat, but I'm obviously just liked for certain reasons that the people are turning against, like, if I get that, like, kind of Cena-ish, Booyah kind of stuff, I'm made. Like, that's was my pitch. Too. It's like, push me as a baby face, but I'm fucking heel. And whatever, yada, yada. We do these matches. They're good matches. He's obviously a very talented person. Carries me through them. And then on the last night, we're working again. And I think we just kind of switched it in mid because the crowd was so anti me and so into him. We're two pros. We can do it on the fly. We kind of switch it up. Same finish, but I show the aggression as a heel, and like it worked. It was awesome. Mm. Then the next night we do Raw, and they just go up to me and go, "You're gonna be heel tonight." Yeah, all right,
great,
perfect. I got a promo? No, okay. And then he's the babyface, and then he slips over the same way I slipped over him, and then here I am.
And that was it.
That was it.
Did you ever have any interactions with Vince or with Hunter to kind of ask what's going on?
I always was very thankful for Hunter for bringing me back to NXT and the time we had there. And he was, when I was working for him, always open to everything. Like, so he was very, it was very cool, enlightening, great lessons. I liked it very much. When he was on the road, not so much. He was not there a lot, too. So when I had interactions with Vince, yeah, I did the 4-hour waits in the hallways. Yeah, I did that. Yeah, I've had a couple conversations with them, and they were all very positive. So he really said everything people would say, like, "You look great. I know you could talk. You had a ton of charisma. You're a good worker, but you're not super flashy, and that's okay because some of my top draws were never the flashy guys." I'm like, "Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Can I talk? Well, I think you're a little over the top." How many promos have you seen of me? One. I think they saw one.
Yeah.
And it was shot in my pool in a condo. And it was, I don't know, fairly over the top. Regardless, it was, we're basing this on one promo. If I could speak, well, I want you to speak like a weatherman. I can do that. It's not gonna
like be a weatherman.
Yeah. Like just very monotone, one dimensional.
Yeah. Okay. It's strange when you hear these things. I mean, I know, this is so random, but I hosted a Golden Gods award show, heavy metal award show, and Vince, I don't know why the hell he saw it, but he saw 10 minutes of it. And this one 10 minute part, I was yelling during it. Like it was an award show. Right. I think maybe it was introducing Metallica or something, like, "It's Metallica. Can you believe it?" Yeah. And for the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks before every promo, we said, "Don't go out there and don't yell. Yeah. When you're out there, don't go out there. When have I yelled once on your show?" "Well, I saw you on that award show. It was Metallica. I was introducing Metallica." Like you said, I was over the top on one promo.
Yeah.
I can be under the top. I can be around the top. What do you want me to do? Or just give me another microphone and I'll do something else and see if you like it better. But once he gets it in his head, it's almost end of the line, which is so crazy.
It's unfortunate. I mean, I'm not going to. I hate people that complain and cry and didn't work out. It's fine.
Yeah, but you're not complaining and crying because to me it's like, why bring a guy in who has a great track record of being able to talk and then just not letting you talk at all?
That was a problem I had too, even on the initial Derek Bateman run, is, all right, we're on a throwaway show. No one gives a shit about. I am going to be over the top because that's going to make me stand out. Mm-hmm. I have a dumb haircut. Like, this, nobody cares, so let's just entertain. And fortunately, when I came to Impact, I was able to bring that character, like, some charisma with it, but I knew this was a more serious thing because I want to be a top guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to tone this part down and bring it back. And, you know, the people that modeled promos after, like, an Austin or a Rock, yourself, you could be entertaining, but then you can switch it.
Yes.
And you can be deadly serious and you can feel
invested. And that's what a top guy can do.
Yeah.
Has to do.
And then that's always what I strive to do. And, well, I didn't have a chance there. I didn't Impact.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was always the label that, "Oh, he's funny, don't make money." Well, give me something serious to talk about and I will. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm insane. I'm very serious. My shirt says Psycho on it.
Yeah. You know? Like, you're a very intense guy. You can tell that,
like,
right?
I'm very. Like, you know, Robin Williams is a comedian. Hilarious. Track record of hilarity, comedies. Mrs. Doubtfire, the one where he's a doctor. Whatever. But then he goes and does Good Will Hunting, and he wins an Oscar because deep down, who he truly is that person. You know, sometimes we use humor as a crutch or a mechanism to shade what hurts us inside.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's me, but it's what I equate it to.
Well, you're totally right, especially in his case, you know, with the end of his life. But the best comedians, let me rephrase that. some of the best actors start out as comedians.
Right.
You know, if you're talking about Steve Martin or Eddie Murphy, some of the great roles that they've played over the years, and Bill Murray. I mean, gosh, Bill Murray, think about the stuff he's done, how he started. Yeah. And that's the diversity of playing a character and being a performer, you know?
I think humor is harder to do sometimes.
Well, it is harder to do, especially in wrestling, because there's so much bad humor.
Oh, it's the worst.
And if you can find the fine line to do it. And the way that I always treat it is you have to play it straight.
Yeah.
If you play it straight, like the ultimate comedian, never cracks, never breaks, you know, no fart and dick jokes. It's right. Real. And that's where the humor comes from, but that's also where the intensity comes from, too.
When you're having a stare down with a drone in your leather pants.
But that's the thing. If this drone is the bane of my existence.
I can't believe it.
You know, can't you tell? Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about kind of your ascent in Impact or TNA back, the original TNA run, because let's go back even a little bit further. How did you get into NXT? Were you working the indies for a while?
NXT the second time?
The first time you were Bateman.
What was it, 2009 I was signed to FCW, so it wasn't the indies how we know them today, and there wasn't like a, I was an indie guy based out of Ohio and like Louisville.
Is that where you're from?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Gotcha.
But I wasn't the proverbial every weekend driving 7-8 hours. I had to work real jobs too.
Gotcha.
So I knew where I would go, which would be a developmental system to be polished and toned up. How I got there, though, was just, I was put on the radar. I did a tryout in probably like 2007 with Tommy Dreamer, so I was kind of in the system. Eventually, I said, I want to make this my full-time. Like, I can't live my life if I don't do this for real. So I went down to OVW unsigned when it was developmental, trained with Rip Rogers in their, like, intermediate class.
Let's talk a little about Rip Rogers quickly. Just talk about that.
Let's swear.
Let's
cuss.
He was in Calgary right when I first started. He was Rip Rogers, and he was tag team with Kerry Brown, and a typical brother of just like the old school black beard and super dyed blonde hair. And then you get to know him, and just to me, I was a mark for all those Stampede guys. But then getting to know him, and you know, he's got the big giant glasses, and he, you know, are you going to eat that when you're at Denny's and eating off your plate and making lemonade out of lemons and sugar and water in the restaurant? And talk a little bit about him and what he taught you and how he was.
I wish every professional wrestler, especially now, can go through at least a 6-month camp with him.
With him, yeah.
Just based on stuff he does with like transitions and reality.
Just talking about the psychology of everything.
Psychology is so good and so not present anymore. And it's hard to say, like, he's not easy on you, which you shouldn't be. Like, this is...
Especially as a trainer.
Yeah, this is a profession. This is a real thing. Very fortunate with that time, but I only had about 7 months with him because I went to do OVW. I think they were filming TV, and I had a match where they're going to use me for real. Cool. And I do this match, and I tear my ACL. So well, that sucks. And then now I'm in Louisville, and I can't work the job. I'm not signed by the WWE. I have to go get surgery. So my dad came and picked me up, and that was a hard drive home, but had the surgery. Started back on the indies. There was a tryout in FCW when they switched over to the developmental thing. So working doubles at the Cheesecake Factory, saving up, fly down, do the tryout, and was signed out of that. And that's where I met number two big influence in my career was Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what a genius. He's a doctor. Yeah.
He's an old school brother too. Both those guys came from the same time frame of that early 80s, mid 80s territorial, you know, utility man type stuff, but both of them geniuses in different ways.
Yeah. He was very much a player's coach too. So he'd be hard on you when you need to be hard on you.
I'm really surprised Dr. Tom doesn't have a steady gig somewhere with one of the companies.
Training is his best asset.
Yeah.
Maybe more so than an agent. I would be remiss if anybody doesn't have an opportunity to, if he's doing a seminar or he has a school, right?
I think he has school with Glenn, right? Yeah. With Kane, yeah.
I believe so.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so.
Learn as much as you can from him.
So how was he an influence on you?
Just, again, psychology, simplicity, work ethic was very big with him. He'd blow you up, but then he'd also tell you why. You know, he was very, accountability with him was big. So being able to, if he made a mistake, he would own up to it, but he expected that out of you too. And then just that old school mentality, I don't want to say it's lost, but it seems as though it's absent.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I have like three coaches, and ironically the number three, and three guys through physical training that are huge influences. So I noticed how it paired off in threes. I just noticed that. There's one more
coach. You see three.
Yeah, weird.
Who's the third coach?
Terry Taylor.
Ah.
Which, when I went back to NXT, when I was signed, I didn't have to go to the PC. I didn't have to report to Orlando. They would use me on maybe coconut shows because I was living in Tampa. But I wanted to be the good soldier, the proverbial all-in. So I was like, no, I'm going to go and, you know, bang heads with the boys. I'm not going to be that guy that had a TV run somewhere else and comes in and just does just TV.
Right.
Like, I hated those dudes. I saw them in FCW when they would come in. Like, I don't want that. Plus, if I'm around wrestling more, I'm going to get better at it. So I was fortunate enough to work with Terry Taylor. Again, old school mentality, work ethic, genius on psychology, but very much knows he's right, whether he is or he's not.
So. That's always the kind of the tag with Terry, why he never made it bigger was because of that.
Yeah, but he was a man's man, and he can talk to you about anything. Mm. And he really cared about the people he trained. I noticed very much he wanted to be an influence positive to them in their personal lives as much as professional.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So he was a father figure.
He was a big component for my career, too. He was the one that gave me my first ever push in WCW. Yeah. Turned me heel when I was, you know, like we mentioned, just a no-name, nothing babyface. So nothing but respect for Terry on my end as well. So you worked with those guys, and then that's kind of how you got hooked up with the original NXT?
Yeah, the original NXT. So I was in the developmental system from 09 to... I mean, till 2013, but in the middle of that, you know, NXT came up the first season with you, like Daniel Bryan and all that. Then the second season came. Then it was kind of went away to like the obscure internet show.
The girls did it one year.
The girls did it. Yeah. They had 3 or 4 weeks on TV. Then it became the internet show. And then we were the fourth season. So just like.
Oh, really? The fourth season?
Yeah, like
online?
The Misfit Toys. Yeah, online. So it was really forgotten about, man. It was like...
Who was your pro?
Daniel Bryan.
Oh. The irony.
We had to the dozens of people that loved that show, we had a very good relationship. So we were perfect balance for each other. Like,
who else was on that year as far as the...
As far as talent, Byron Saxton, Jacob Novak. Who? I know. Tyrus, a.k.a. Brodus Clay, and Johnny Curtis, a.k.a. Fandango.
No, this is not a bad group.
Good
guys
brothers.
That made some money there.
Connor O'Brien was on there. I think I'm missing somebody. It's a great run.
Right, so you're doing the internet shows.
Yep.
Is that kind of where it ended for you?
We did the internet show. That did end. I believe Fandango won, though I was clearly the crowd's favorite. Then I go back to developmental, and then they have no idea what's going on with NXT. I actually had to have a knee surgery again. So after that last episode, I went right to Birmingham and got my knee fixed. Awesome. Season 5 happened, and it was originally going to be guys like Woods and Rollins and stuff like that, but then they were just kind of like, nah, we're just going to reuse the riffraff because we don't want to waste these guys on
right.
So what was it called? NXT Redemption. They brought back a bunch of people that used to be on it. This is, man, you're really making my brain work. This is awesome. Okay, so I'm healing up from the injury. I'm working in developmental. I'm getting back. I get the call. Like, yeah, all right, we got something for you on SmackDown. I'm like, hell yeah. Like I'm like ready to rock. Here we go. I get up to SmackDown, and I'm kind of like, surveying the land, I'm like, I don't see exactly where I'm fitting in on SmackDown right now. I wonder what it is, but someone's gonna tell me. Oh, you're gonna do the dark match. Cool, I'm ready. Dark match done. Stay in your gear. Okay. So NXT Redemption goes by. I'm just sitting there and I'm like, oh, God damn it. No, please don't. Like, oh yeah, you're gonna be on NXT Redemption now. We need to bring in some more star power.
So star power.
You're like, what? Great. So at the end of one of the episodes, I walk back on stage like to do an ant farting. Like no one knows who I am or why I'm there. No one cares about the show. And so we're back on Redemption, and that was just endless. But it was a great character building because they cared so little about it. We did have free reign to talk, do skits and vignettes and promos, and it was entertaining. I had a soap opera-esque level love triangle with Maxine and Fandango.
Who's Maxine? Was she on Lucha Underground or something?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Trina.
Carla? What's her?
Yes.
Yeah. It's so funny that you say that because that's what you have to do, and that's what a true pro will do, is take whatever you're given and make it good, or at least learn from it.
Yeah.
Even if nobody's watching, you can still learn and create cool stuff. So, and I always, I think too, you never know who is watching.
Yeah.
Especially in Vince's world, someday he might say, "What's going on this Redemption thing? Who's that guy?" You know.
If anyone wants to research anything from my NXT run, I think the double dates with Daniel Bryan and myself and the Bella Twins. Is top shelf.
Really? You were in that? Did they do that on Raw too, but without you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, they did that NXT?
That's where it started.
Oh, so you
had American
Nikki
flag pants and a fanny pack on, Michael Paisley's. I flipped the table. I threw a bag of change at Nikki. It's hilarious. Obviously, no writer wrote that. It was Daniel Bryan, myself, and the Bellas.
Of course.
Yeah, it was. What else? And then there was a wedding with Maxine I interrupted. I mean, there was some goofy ass shit. It was fun. I definitely had fun. I definitely learned. And I was working in front of live crowds every week. The only thing that would have been better was like, hey, you're going to be on SmackDown, and here's a sweet push. But I made the most of it.
Right. So then how did you end up in Impact the first time?
Well, I had another knee injury.
You guys have a lot of injuries.
Yeah, I'm a beat up piece of shit. Ruggedly handsome and torn apart.
Right.
Had another knee injury. They were switching over from FCW to NXT. They brought in a new Bill, and this is the head coach, Dr. Tom's out. And as they were moving over, I had no place there. So I'm not used on the main roster. I don't need to be here anymore. For the best, fired. That's fine.
Did you ask for it? Or did they...
I did not ask for
gotcha.
It, no.
So they let you go there?
Yeah.
But it wasn't too long before you ended up in Impact, though.
No, I was... After that 90 days, ironically enough, I was... right into Impact. And I was very fortunate too, because the thing that got me fired, a change in power and change in structure, is what got me an opportunity in Impact, because there was a change in their creative in their front office and somebody coming in that wanted to bring in his guys or new guys, and I was the lead charge for that. So it's weird how it works.
But that's the business though, you know?
Yeah.
It's always been that way. I mean, Tom and Dr. Tom and Rip Rogers will tell you that too.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little more about the Ethan.
You never take yourself out the game. That was Dr. Tom advice.
Did you say, what did he say?
You never take yourself out the game.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, meaning?
That don't stop and don't shoot yourself in the foot. Mm. It's like, so just, it'll be there and it will come back to you.
So what was the differences for you when you went from kind of the crazy machine of the WWE into TNA originally?
It was... Initially, the PTSD of WWE, where you think everything's being critiqued and criticized and someone's stabbing you in the back even when they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So getting over that hump was the main issue. And then just becoming free in myself to develop myself and put forward what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Be creative, be an athlete, be all these things. I mean, the biggest difference, obviously... I never had the high-end WWE experience, so it wasn't like I was coming from a great run on Raw where I peaked early as a kid, and then now I'm like slumming it. I was very thankful for it because we're still running TV every week. We're traveling. Plus, I have the opportunity. Here's what we want you to say, some bullet points, but make it your own. I had the opportunity. I was writing a program with Sting.
Like,
what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even talent sing. It's... Holy shit, this is cool. And then from there to like, I was working with top level guys and just soaking it all up.
Did you come in as Ethan Carter 3?
I did. It was Ethan Carter the 3rd.
Right.
And then I had a vignette, a real vignette shot with
real cameras?
I'm a real boy.
Yeah, with purpose and meaning. It was cool. I had lions, but they ended up being giant hound dogs because I couldn't actually find lions. Mm-hmm. Classic Impact. But I came in with something. I was given something, and I was very much able to run with it. If somebody else was given the exact same thing as me, it'd probably be a totally different character. Totally
yeah, different. No, you really embraced that character. That's yeah. where I started taking notice of you. You did like it's TNA, and it's Impact now, but talking about TNA then, they had so many guys that came through that really made something of themselves.
Truly.
You being one of them, Samoa Joe and AJ, and like it's interesting to me that they didn't have the capacity to be able to make money off it, basically, yeah. you know?
You wish. They had the talent, for sure.
Yeah.
But it was always hindered by some outside sources, like forces.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. It's no fault of the...
Of the guys.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
And then some guys came in for, like, easy pay and saw that it was the Wild West and they can do whatever they want. And, you know, kind of cuts off their motivation to bring it to the next level. Now there's like, it's easy money.
It's probably the same guys that did that in WCW 20 years prior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I lived. Were you there things through your eyes?
Were you there when Bischoff came in and when Hogan came in? Or yeah, was that?
I was the last 2 weeks of the Bischoff Hogan run.
Oh, so just as you came in, they were. Yeah.
And interestingly enough, there was, it was John Gaborik who was pushing for the EC3 character, and Eric Bischoff was actually saying it would never work and fought against it. And unbeknownst to me, I became sort of the pawn in their
really
fight for power. I didn't find this out till a lot later. But yeah, so, and then somebody had to make a decision and they let go of Eric.
Why did Bischoff think it wasn't going to work?
I think he just didn't think the character would work. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a knock on me or a slight on me at all. It was
just the concept of this rich nephew or whatever.
Yeah, but then he did apparently say, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. Character works. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, because I'm fucking awesome, dude.
So what kind of led to the end of your run there?
The end of my run there, I had, like, I think from 2015 to 2016 was, like, probably the best part of my life just because I was working at a high level. I felt responsible for the company. They gave me every opportunity, and I just was carrying the flag. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I worked my ass off for them. And, you know, a lot of people work their ass off, but sometimes they don't feel like they're appreciated. I was appreciated. And it was just, we were doing the business part I had no control over, was not doing well, but the stuff I was doing, I would put up against anybody's.
Yeah, the stuff you were in control of.
I was in controlling my narrative, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it came, like, I had the bloodbath with our buddy, Rockstar Spud, Drake Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to Kurt Angle. And what was my dream match growing up? World Heavyweight Title match with Kurt Angle.
And you had that?
I had it.
Yeah.
And I won.
Oh. How'd you like working with Kurt?
Oh, amazing. Even though he was at the tail end, like, he still, he gave it his all, of course, but it was more so after working with him and just talking to him. And then, like, you can always worry about critiques you may have from people online or people in certain positions of power, but I think the greatest feeling is the respect of your peers.
Yes.
And he respected me after it. I was like, mm-hmm. All right, that was... I get a little misty talking about it. It means a lot to me. So,
now, one of the most greatest naturals to the business ever. Like, from his first day in, he was great. And his last day in, he was great.
He blew me up.
Everything in between, you know?
He German suplexed me 17 times in our match. He made me earn it. So.
Wow.
Yeah. It's cool.
In a row?
No, I think there was a three. I think we did another spot. There was a three.
Yeah.
I think there was another spot. There was like a five. Mm-hmm. And I think there was just like, let's see how many we can do till we don't want to do this anymore.
So you're working at the top level in TNA at the time.
Yeah.
So then what led to you leaving there?
What led to me, I had the run. Then there was kind of like the inevitable babyface run, which is all right. But at this time, there was constant power struggle. And it was between, you know, Dixie, John Gaborik was involved, then he wasn't. Now Billy Corgan's involved. Now Jeff Jarrett's involved, and now Anthem's involved. And it was, somebody should tell you that story, and I wonder who'd be the perfect person, because it was Literally Game of Thrones.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's kind of what goes on in WWE, but I'm sure there with all these different powers, because that's when Billy wanted to buy the company as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one week he's our boss, and the next week, you know, Jeff's our boss, and then Dutch is there with Bruce, and then the next week Anthem's in charge, but then the next week is Billy. Like, it was disheartening. And it was, at the time, I'm kind of a locker room leader. I don't want to say that, but I tried to at least put on the best face forward that everything's fine, everything's fine. It was impossible to tell. Mm-hmm. And then you always hear the rumors about this company is going to be done next week. Never were. I mean, damn, does that place survive? But it was just, it was a lot at once. And then I'm looking at the wall, writing on the wall here. Somebody, they turned me back into a heel. Like, it was just, I was rehashing what I've already done.
Right.
I was like the best of EC3, but it wasn't that good anymore.
If it was the 80s, it'd be time to leave the territory.
It was time for me to leave the territory.
Yeah.
And then when Anthem finally settled in, before I had the chance to really work with them, and it was not anything, I had a really good deal for at least another 6 or 7 months, but I'm looking at it, I'm like, you need to start with new guys. I need to go try this again. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't, I'll live with regret again, and I can't have that. It just, like, I know when the time's up for this contract, I won't have it, and that's fine. But at the same time, if you can save on me now, you can start the rebuild and put yourself in a better position. It just, it was a business sense. It was very mutual. And they wanted to keep me, but obviously, financially, it was better I don't. And whatever you need out of me, let me do business on the way out. And at the same time, we were talking with NXT, so... Mm-hmm. It was nothing but I need a reinvention. I need to do something different.
Yeah.
My personal life was like shit, too. Mm. Just everything was just like nothing felt good or right. And I knew as long as the WWE was over there that I would always think, what if? So it was pretty like Scott D'Amore was very appreciative of my honesty and he agreed with me. And then we just said, handshake, let's do business, and we'll talk down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we did.
Which you did, right. I was just going to ask you, when you came in to NXT as EC3, because usually they don't do that. Right. You know, usually they want to kind of change it over to something different, or especially now, they'll give you some, you know, Braxton.
Buffington.
Exactly, right. Fuck. Elias Manscaping. Whatever. So what? How were you able to keep that?
I had the trademark to it, was one. I asked, really, because I believe they changed the War Raiders. I came with the Viking Raiders, Ricochet.
They let him keep Ricochet.
Yeah, but then Ricochet was going through the same thing where they wanted to change his name. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting there, like, notepads, struggling, writing, like, full nail. That sucks. Yeah. Like, Ezra Crushington, are you serious? No, but if they'll have to use EC3 if they see this shit. So, but then we both wound up with him. And I think both worked. They had brands built upon themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they needed to be.
Is that something you have to talk with Hunter about to see if you can keep it?
Yeah, but it wasn't a hard conversation. It was like, I think I built a brand with EC3. I think I can make it run, and we just make it our own here. Okay, well, cool, mm-hmm. Great.
So then what was the character then in NXT? What was the difference?
The difference, never had a chance to really explain why it was different. I tried to via the two over-the-top promos from a pool. But as opposed to, all right, it's the top 1%. I mean, that just sounds cool. Everyone hates that.
Yeah.
Everyone loves it. Like, it's a thing.
That's a great gimmick, too.
But I didn't come over, and this is some flack I get. Like, how can you beat Dixie's nephew in WWE? I never said I was Ethan Carter III. I'm EC3. Mm-hmm. I'm an initial.
It's different now. Yeah. HBK.
Triple
H.
Yeah. And I just made it, the top 1% is more than a tax bracket. It's a mentality. And because of the brand I built, man, all I wanted to do was be a bumping heel for all the guys that did flashy shit and like grind it out. But I was popular, so I would get cheered. So then, oh, he's babyface. Also, I come in, I already have a brand, I'm already fairly popular, I get good reactions. They're like, eh, we don't really have to do much with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. So I just kind of existed.
Right.
Impacts EC3. It was, yeah.
Kind of making it.
There was never really like an in-depth feud I had. There was never any character development. And ironically, what I'm doing now was a pitch I originally wanted to do coming off of the takeover match.
Takeover.
Bad concussion. But the way I look at something is, if I'm this proud man who talks about winning all the time and I lose this big match, I'm not going to come back and do the same thing. I have to change.
Mm-hmm.
I have to evolve into something. Plus, I got my bell rung for real. Like, let's go like with this darker sort of cultish route. And instead, they put me back in there, and then I got concussed again, and then they called me up. And I'm called up as EC3, so I assume I'm the top 1% still.
That's what
okay,
you want. Yeah.
Let's build it up. How are we going to build it up? You have one vignette in your own apartment. Okay, cool. And there's only really one top percent in this company. He's the boss, so you're not really the top 1%. So why don't you just stand in front of a mirror and pose? Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. I fought that too.
Did you actually do the staying in front of the mirror posing?
Yeah,
thing?
A couple times.
The Lex Luger gimmick?
Yeah. But not in front of like a cool mirror where some hot babe's coming off and has like fireworks coming off of it, like a mirror backstage where I'm just flexing like I'm flexing like Pat Bateman banging the Auburn blonde. A dirty blonde, aren't you? So, which is where I stole from. But yeah, even seeing that, I'm like, whatever we do, please just don't make me a one-dimensional body guy. I'm just begging you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm anything but that. Pose in front of the mirror.
I am now that.
I know. Yeah. I don't know.
You keep.
We try to make art sometimes, and you just need to paint by the numbers.
So. Well, but you also have to feel it, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Never felt it.
Yeah, I mean
that's on me, too.
Let's talk about it a little bit when you kept mentioning you got concussed. Like, it sounds like it was pretty bad. Did that affect your life pretty significantly?
Yeah, it was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to come back from. And like we talked about the knees and like that bulging discs, torn pecs, torn bicep. The hardest thing I've ever to come back from was that concussion, the second. So it was, I don't know how deep we can get, but I could probably get real deep with it.
Is it messing up like your everyday life sort of thing?
It was.
Wow. Yeah.
So I come off the takeover. We've all had our bell rung in matches, but I come off of a takeover with Dream. And it was.
The Dream, yeah.
It was the first time I don't remember anything. And so that petrified me. I woke up like, I remember making an entrance, and then all of a sudden I was in the trainer's room.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, what's going on? And they go, do you know what city you're in? And I said, no.
Hmm.
And I didn't. And I was like, what? Oh, no. That I've been Teflon and tough as shit my whole life. But that was the one time I've, like...
Yeah. It's pretty creepy, yeah.
Wasn't great.
Yeah.
So, but eventually come back from that. Then a second one came immediately when I came back from that one. And then the call-up. So I get called up, already concussed. I feel obligated to get back as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Because I assume there's reasons and purposes to this call-up. So with a concussion, like, you can take the tests and pass them, but it doesn't mean you're right.
Right.
And I didn't say, I'm not right, but I didn't know if I was right.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was right anymore because it's the second time. And I was so...
And those tests are just like, you know, compare this design to that design or compare this shape to that shape. It took me a while to realize that they're only comparing to what you did before.
Right.
There's like, I was always thinking, I'm going to get this wrong and fail. It's like, no, you're just comparing to what you did last time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the judge of it, right?
Baseline.
Yeah, the baseline. That's it. Yeah.
And I'm not trying to knock anything.
No. But
they took care of it. But at the same time, I'm called up. It's time to go. This is my dream. Let's go. I couldn't, really.
Mm-hmm. So,
then, you know, I'm having this terrible run on the main roster. Still feel awful every day. Sad, miserable, all these things that resonate from that. Working guys that have been wrestling 10 years who still can't do it safely.
Yeah.
I get rocked again. But I don't say anything. I believe we're in Denver, Colorado, and I walked into a building. I stayed in Vegas and I was hanging out with people, but I slept in the hotel room the whole time. And then I just walk into TV. I'm like, ghost white. And a trainer asked me if I was okay. And I was like, no. And I told him, Yeah, 2 weeks ago in Albuquerque, I think this happened, and I thought I was all right, and I was trying to do this, and we ran off of this thing, and I don't know. Do the test. Don't pass it. Don't pass it for months. I had to go to a physical therapist to work on cognitive activities and a psychiatrist to battle wits with, like, deep.
Wow, so you were really messed up from this.
I was real bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they put me on pills to try to, like, make my serotonin work or dopamine. They were horrible. Like, that's it. What happened to fart jokes? But eventually I finally came through, got cleared, ready to go and to pitch. I start pitching kind of the deal I'm doing now because it was kind of, I didn't want to pitch it because I was so into it. It had a lot of power over me, like this character, this idea. I knew if I gave it to somebody else, it's not going
to
go right.
Right. It has to be free.
But I also have to do something because I can't come back as is. Start pitching. Yeah, it's great. We love it. Oh, that's really cool. And then, you know, COVID fired. So it's okay.
COVID fired. And what you're talking about is it control your narrative? Is that what?
Yeah. It's sort of a control your narrative. It's basically was like a Tyler Durden Fight Club kind of thing, but then sort of evolved into something more because I just started speaking my truth, doing whatever. I get fired. Like, first thing I did when I got fired was finish my yoga session. Really happy. And then I post my pitch in its entirety onto social media with a promo I did to accompany it. And it was cool. And then
it was really good.
Yeah. Let's just run with this for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I started making more and more and kind of grew and grew. I realized, though, that at the same time I'm pitching kind of a cult leader to people. But because I'm speaking truth from my real life and from my heart and real angst and pains and miseries and whatever, people, especially in this time, this COVID time, people are losing it all, like jobs, family, their minds. It resonated with a lot of people with the messages I would get. And I'm not a self-praise sucks, so I'm not self-praising, but you know the difference between someone saying, so-and-so's great, like at a tweet or a DM that's like paragraphs long of like, you said this, and this made me think this is this. This is very. So I don't want to so much be a cult leader as much as like a COVID anti-hero is how I describe it now. So.
Did this character come as a result of COVID, or did you always kind of have it?
Yes,
in the back of your head.
I think COVID pushed it to the forefront in people's minds because they were feeling a lot of things that I was talking about. But this character came from me and my life and. I don't know how to phrase it. Dream job screws you over twice. Dream girl screws you over twice. Starting businesses, being robbed by a con man. You know, just the government shuts down things, so now this business might fail. Plus, my parents have been small business owners, and they can't do anything about it. So what's going to happen to them?
Right.
Nothing. You're in control of nothing, and you're lied to all the time. So that's just...
Yeah, it's a real interesting point because I was wondering when someone would write an album about it, come up with a gimmick about it, you know, because it's very strange, all of these different things. And if you can harness that and utilize it creatively, then it's a plus for sure.
Great art comes from great pain.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was it like, though, when you were talking about, you know, COVID fired? Obviously, probably a little bit scary for you. Or did you know, okay, there's other places to go or...
Honestly, after WrestleMania, if it was a normal time frame, I would have probably asked for my release because I was not happy as a person.
Right.
Just
sitting around doing nothing.
That too, but just being unable to create when you're super creative, dude. Like, you need that.
One of the reasons why I left.
Yeah. It just hurt every day and then nothing mattered, so it didn't matter. Train, like, why do I bust my ass in the gym twice a day? Why do I write all these, like, just nothing matters. So I was probably going to, but at the same time I didn't because I have a job in the giant economic downturn that pays well when who the hell knows what's going to happen to the family. Like, I have to be smart about this,
right?
But they did for me and it's fine. Like, the only worry was, is entertainment going to be around in 90 days? What's going to be there? You know, if it was a normal world, like, first off, I would have asked, and they probably would have said no. And I wouldn't have been the guy that's like, oh, yeah, that's from my, you know.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
No, but, like, I would have asked them as a man, and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. I am not a happy person. My life is not good. I don't want to do this. I can't. Like, whatever. But they did it for me. Thank you. Yeah, and just the worry about entertainment as a whole. Is it going
to
be here?
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day, and there's a couple things I want to ask you about. But it's like I was telling somebody, like, we don't even know who's over anymore.
Yeah.
Like, there's no crowd. So, you know, is Jericho still over? Is Edge still over? Is Orange Cassidy still over? Is EC3 still over? Like, who the f*** knows, right? That's the thing that was bothering me. When you've heard about, okay, you were cool with getting released. You kind of were anticipating or wanting it. But they're releasing 15, 30, 45 people in the middle of this pandemic.
Yeah.
Did you feel that was a little bit like, come on, guys? Or did you just take it as it is, knowing how the company can be?
At this point, I would say nothing surprises me.
Yeah.
And it's a business. I get it. It was a lot. And a lot. I don't have a wife or kids, you know? Like, so it's easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
Would suck for others. But, I mean, I get it. And you know you only get hired to get fired, so it's not.
Right.
It's going to happen. What I have, I don't know. I don't have the circumstances. I don't have the knowledge. I don't have... It's not my business. My business was to be a low-shelf entertainer for your circus. toy in your toolbox, the arms off of him, put under a magnifying glass and melt. But that's all about. It's my dream job. Yeah. So it's hard to say. There's two sides to every story. Truth lies in the middle. I'm not going to degrade them for doing that, but I'm not going to praise them either.
Mm-hmm. So talk about how you kind of ended up back with the new and improved Impact, run by a very smart guy and one of my longest friends, Don Callis.
Don rules. And yeah. I've never been creatively in line with somebody I've never met till last week.
Right.
When we did this. I like finishing each other's
sentences. There it is. Sandwiches.
Yes. Yeah, he's totally into, like, because I'm very wordy when I write. So I wrote what I saw this character as, which was just insanity on a typed, just nonsense.
Mm.
But he read it and was like, oh, and then he made it better, which, so I had 90 days to create something that I wanted to take elsewhere. And I did that with whatever.
Did you contact Impact fairly early on?
They got a hold of me.
Yeah.
Let's talk soon. And we were always flirty, mm-hmm. flirty. I actually almost didn't go back there because I thought it was too obvious. It's too easy.
Mm-hmm.
It was too simple. There's other things I was working on and doing. I have a very broad plan that I really can't reveal in its entirety because it's going to play out. But I had some shit going. I'm controlling the narrative. Is what
right.
I'm trying to say.
Which is great. But you're excited to be back with Impact now.
Very
though.
Much yeah. Because when I left, they had to sacrifice everything to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very impressed and I'd always check in. But they had to, everything, every time with TNA was always new person, new coat of paint, but the core was broken. The foundation was a mess. They realized that and they like, we're going to have to take six steps back so we can make a giant leap forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they play their cards right and are on the precipice of it. So I'm very impressed with how they were able to do that. I'm very happy to be back. Scott and Don seem to have everything together. Company with their network, it seems they're poised to make a jump. And if I can help with that, that's awesome.
It's great, too, because, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what this financial situation with Dixie was there, but they have a legit billionaire. I mean, that guy who owns Anthem, the Asper family, they're like the most famous family in Winnipeg, which is where I'm from, Don's from. So they have money. They're billionaires. So.
Oh, I was at their Orlando estate once.
There you go.
In a suit.
Yeah.
Sweaty palmed. Like, why am I here?
Yeah. But it's good to know that they have the financial backing if necessary.
Yeah, I don't know what to add to that. Besides the fact that, like, another place for people to work, cool. An alternative to your sports entertainment, great. good, like they built a solid foundation of talent with like Eddie and Moose, I think, who stuck it out through the hard times and are now leaders there. Which pains me to say about Moose especially. But they did well, and I'm very proud and happy for him because I did like him, and it was not easy to leave, but I felt like I had to. So,
well, yeah, but also too, with the influx of all the new talent with Jamie Gallows and Anderson, you got some legit main event guys in there.
Suddenly it's cool.
Yeah.
The one thing, it's just so hard to gauge because you're in front of no people.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I went out there, oh man, I just feel
this is your first time, right?
Yeah. And trust me, I worked Impact house shows, all right? So I know what it's like to be in front of no people. I trained in FCW Dungeon. We wrestled matches in front of nobody ever. But man, just like, yeah, it's a strange thing. It's so feeling based. And at least with like AEW, there seems to be that interaction a little bit.
Yeah, we have some people, but it's funny because I was talking to whatever match we had the other day of like, oh, we had a match with Jungle Boy, and he's like, or maybe Luchasaurus, is me and Hager, and he's like, did I get up too quick? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I can't tell you that because usually my barometer is the sound of the crowd, the noise of the crowd. How are they reacting? You know how it is. Yeah. So I don't know if you got up too soon or not because there's nobody f***ing here. So yes, no, maybe, all of the above, none of the above.
I bet he did. Yes, I bet he did. Luchasaurus. Yeah.
So as we start to wind down here, I think it's exciting. I mean, you must be feel fortunate that Impact did bring you back and to a very high level. You were kind of the main event of the pay-per-view. And the fact that you have another gig now in the middle of this, COVID, that's pretty cool.
It is. Because, there's this wise dude who once started something new, and he had this clock. That just ticked. And you never knew what it was going to be. And then when it dropped, he emerges. So I stole that idea. And nice. When we got fired, because we had the 90 days, so I had the 90-day clock. And then a month in, I'm like, oh, shit, what are we going to do? Is this even a Wednesday?
When does it end? Yeah.
And my partner with the print shop and some of my creative weirdness, JC, is like, we should do a match. Okay. We've done matches. I mean, they're doing match, Stadium Stampede, Broken. Like, I think the cinematic match might jump the shark. I don't know if it's such a good idea. And we'll do it realistic and we'll do a cinematic fight. Mm-hmm. So at the end of that month, I'm spending a month putting together a shoot for a cinematic fight, call it the narrative, pay off all this character development we did online. And that kind of, at least occupying my mind, while at the same time things were falling into place as far as Impact and other things as well.
Which we still can't discuss.
No, we can't. Yeah, I'm just happy nobody knows.
Yeah. An actual secret.
Yeah.
An actual surprise.
I love surprises. So,
last thing for you, what was your favorite match that you had? Can't even say in WWE because you probably didn't even have that many, but WWE, your last WWE NXT experience.
Easily the ladder match in New Orleans with NXT TakeOver before WrestleMania. I mean, it was a 5-star match.
Who was in it?
Myself, Killian Dane, Lars Sullivan, Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole, and Ricochet.
That's a great lineup.
So, I did all the shooting
stuff. Yeah, all the flips.
Yeah, all of them.
The 675.
I literally gave my life for that match. It's like, well, I can't do any of that cool stuff, so maybe I could get beaten.
Just down catch it all?
Yeah.
Especially in a ladder match, just pick up the ladder and hit people with it. Yeah. That's the one thing guys like that never do.
Yeah, but I mean, what a comeback! Like, man, sucks. I almost wish I started with vignettes in a get over matches though, because once you jump in, your first experience is that. Like, where do we go?
Where do you go from there?
Yeah, it's very disheartening. But yeah, I mean, very proud to be part of that match. So that would easily be the one.
So last question, what are your plans for Impact? What do you want to bring to the table and what do you want to...
Creative ingenuity. I want to create a character that's based in reality, but is just... I just want wrestling to be different. I feel we're very paint by the numbers, everybody across the board. Everything's the same to me. So I just want it to be something different, something real, hopefully resonates on a personal level with people, emotional level. Allows them, whether they like it or not, doesn't matter to me. It's just, they feel something when they see it. I just want to create something that will last. So I can bury the past, which is the arc of the characters. I'm coming back to destroy my past because my past is full of anxieties, depression, regrets, angst, sadness. Like, I can never move forward as long as that past exists. So it's almost perfect to start this narrative in Impact, because that's where I had my most success.
Mm-hmm.
That was the precipice for me becoming who I am, and then where it went, who's at fault?
Right, right.
You know,
we'll you're the self-terminator going back to destroy your past.
Dude,
it's great having you.
Yeah.
And what a great chat. And you brought some Grey Goose, which is awesome. It's too early to have some, but.
I had a wonderful chat in your palatial estate, I must say.
Yes, dude. Yeah.
You know, you don't do. Your office, I meant to say this in the beginning, your office is the perfect balance of like portraying family and my success with classy interior. You know, it's not too much like.
Yeah. It's not Gene Simmons' house. There's every single thing on the wall, but there's a couple things.
I mean, there's only the four books I wrote here, right?
Thanks, dude.
Thank you, brother.